Nobody has the right to limit anyone's potential. No one has the expertise of what anyone's potential is. No one knows. So we have to assume potential's unlimited for everybody, and to support everybody, and to challenge people to grow and support them in their growth.
It's easy to talk about the successes, but what doesn't get talked about enough is the struggle. My name is Eric Weinmayer. I've gotten the chance to ascend Mount Everest, to climb the tallest mountain in every continent, to kayak the Grand Canyon, and I happen to be blind. It's been a struggle to live what I call a no-barriers life, to define it, to push the parameters of what it means. And part of the equation is diving into the learning process and trying to illuminate the universal elements that exist along the way. In that unexplored terrain between those dark places we find ourselves in the summit, exists a map. That map, that way forward, is what we call no barriers.
Today, we explore the ways that COVID is impacting our schools across the nation by talking with Dr. Michael Kuchar, whose impressive resume includes a combined 25 years of experience as a school district administrator. He's the immediate past president of the New Jersey Association of Superintendents and the chair of the Middle States Association of Secondary Schools. In 2017, the College Board recognized Dr. Kuchar for his commitment to education with the Bernard P. Ireland Recognition Award, and in 2020, he was recognized with the 2020 Distinguished Service Award from the New Jersey Association of Superintendents. Currently, Dr. Kuchar is the superintendent of the South Bergen Jointure Commission, a New Jersey public school district whose mission is to dramatically increase the independence of individuals with extraordinary challenges. Enjoy the conversation. Well, Eric, I'm really excited to join you again today with Dr. Kuchar. This is going to be a really interesting conversation about something that's happening to many of us in our lives that relates to the schools and the school systems and how they are responding in this month of September to a totally new dynamic that has never been seen before, perhaps in the history of the world. We're going to be doing a series of podcasts that focus on education and learning. And as I was thinking about this conversation and just about you and me, Eric, I mean, we just in our own lives, we run the gamut with our own kids. I've got a kid in elementary school and middle school. You've got a kid in high school and university. I mean, we are seeing in our own lives this just as many of our listeners are. So I'm excited for the conversation today to get some insight that might help us as we're exploring this challenging time of going back to school. So welcome, Eric, and welcome, Dr. Kuchar.
Yeah, I have a son. My son's a senior. He's in the other room right now. He was cooking a hamburger. I was like, dude, get out of the kitchen. I got to do a podcast.
So, yeah, I spent the morning teaching my kid math. So my eighth grade kid, you know, I was helping out with math. So
this is an exciting month, launching the new year, the new school year. And so it's really perfect timing to talk to Dr. Kuchar. I can call you Mike, right?
Please do.
Okay. Please
do. You make me feel a little old calling me Dr. Kuchar.
First of all, congratulations on your Distinguished Service Award that you got from the New Jersey Association of Administrators. That was really cool. I saw that video, and you deserve it, and your team deserve it. So nice recognition.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. But I just said, don't make me feel old. They get distinguished service awards for longevity. So thanks for coming in, Eric.
Well, you have been at it 39 years, isn't that right?
Yes, it is. Right on the money. This is my 39th year.
Nice. So what was it? What has it been like starting the year? I bet it's been exciting and chaotic and probably very, very lots of energy output.
Well, I don't ever want to use the word exciting because exciting has a positive tone to it. I think it's sacred work. And we're doing very sacred work because we're doing work where people's lives are on the line. And so we approached the reopening of school with that sacred belief that we had an overriding guideline that we will develop plans to open school where no child and no adult would get sick. And we took it really seriously, like all schools are taking serious. But as you know, I work with children with extraordinary abilities, unique challenges, and so they have a whole host of other issues that we work with in the schools. And when we approached this, our governor, on June 26th, he announced that we were going to go and reopen the schools in September, and he gave us a road to recovery plan. And in it, he gave us 10 elements to open schools to ensure a safe opening. I asked my faculty, staff, and parents for volunteers to work with us on this committee. So we had 10 committees, and I had over 100 volunteers. And so for the past 6 weeks, we approached this sacred work, dealing with the elements, the critical elements of a safe opening with the guiding principle, nobody gets sick. You know, it's still ongoing. We're tweaking it each and every day. You know, the challenges of the pandemic changes hour to hour, day to day, week to week. So it is never, ever fully finished. And we're always engaged of how to be better, how to prepare. And we also added two elements to the process, to the governor's 10 critical elements. We added another of education, and the other one we added was outreach service. Again, children with unique needs. So we had surveyed the parents, we've surveyed faculty, and we realized our students were regressing. They were regressing, they weren't doing well. They needed the in-person service for them not to grow, let alone not to regress. Mm-hmm. So we put the planning together, and over 100 people the past 5-6 weeks, and we're confident that September 8th will be welcoming all the children in school all the time.
My son, Arjun, I just mentioned, they have this model where he's going to go twice a week to school and do the rest of his courses online. They're going to split the school in half. So what is the model that you guys have created? Because I know you have kids with a lot of medical conditions. They're vulnerable to COVID and so forth. And, you know, I imagine that's really challenging to figure out how to create a safe environment for them. And I heard this interview with this mom, and she was saying, you know, my kid has special needs, and virtual classes are really hard for him. And we talk about essential workers, and she's like, his speech therapist and occupational therapist and his physical therapist, these are essential as essential can be.
I got to say, my faculty and staff agree with that parent, agree with you, and we all are in agreement that it is essential. And so when we developed the plans, again, our team, we developed them with safety in mind. What do the hospital workers do? What do the first responders do? So we adopted the medical model. So while we might not be able to control our children with unique abilities with their ability to wear masks, what we can control is what our faculty and staff can do to keep themselves safe and to keep the children safe. So we'll be using full PPE for everybody, and we'll be using the besides the personal protection, we'll have barriers and shields. But because we are a school serving special needs, our class size is already low. So we'll be even able to social distance.
That's amazing.
Mike, so the South Bergen Jointure Commission, it took me, first of all, like a couple months just to say that properly, if I'm saying it properly. It's a little bit confusing. I mean, so your charter, your commission is, you have a board of director or board of education. You have your own schools that serve kids with special needs. You also contract and serve other school districts around the state and so forth. How does it work? Like, how do you govern and how do you provide those services? And why do you exist? Like, what was the history of you being there?
So we were started in 1992, and we were really a model of shared service. 15 districts in Southern Bergen County, where there are over 75 school districts, 15 of them said, look, we all have similar needs. We're all too small to do it ourselves. Let's set up a jointure commission to service us as a shared service. So we've been doing special education, transportation for 15 of the Bergen County school districts. And as we've been growing, we've been taking on other school districts as they need service. So as of today, we've been doing transportation for 50 of the 75 districts in the county. We've been doing outreach services for almost 40 of the districts in Bergen County. So we're a service organization, and we're governed by 15 superintendents that make up the South Bergen Jointure Commission. It took me 2 years to figure that out.
And what went on before the 90s? Like, what were the kids, where were they? Like, what happened to them? I know that when I was a kid, like, it was, you know, mainstreaming was the big buzzword.
We've really come to learn, too, that regardless of the disability, children will do best in their neighborhood school surrounded by their typical peers. And not only that, typical peers. We talk about today equity, inclusion, diversity. We're robbing typical kids the experience of the uniquely abled kids with extraordinary abilities. So I think that, again, and you know, David and Eric, that our goal is to be in neighborhood schools and provide that expertise and support so that children can thrive in a typical classroom, regardless of their classifications. And again, is another step in the direction of living an independent life.
So a school might have like some kids with autism or multiple disabilities or behavioral issues, and they are unprepared, right? They're ill-equipped. And so that's where you guys come in, right? What kind of services, like what's an example of something you might do to help a school out?
So if schools are experiencing a child whose behavior is disruptive and so forth, there's a classification, and as awful as it sounds, it's emotional disability, ED. And so those students, they will send to us. And what we've been doing is we have behavior modification programs, counseling, we have behaviorists. And what we do is try to mitigate what causes the student to have outbursts. And we teach them skills to self-regulate. So our goal is teaching that child in no more than 2 to 3 years the skills so they could be integrated back into mainstream schools. We hired a full-time individual who is teaching our kids breathing and yoga and meditation. And we're learning that that has had a great deal to do with helping our students self-regulate, to relax. And again, there's a lot of technical skills and knowledge that we can bring forth to a school district to students to help the child get back to the individual school. We partnered with Rutgers University, had them do a study of our school and our programs. And it's pretty interesting when, you know, we have a pandemic and some of the issues of pandemic might naturally help with some of the ways we as a district had to grow. And what Rutgers, the Douglas Developmental, when they did our program evaluation, you know, they said that we could do a better job with proximity and that we're hover too much and do too much for kids. I think COVID is going to help us.
Yeah, there you go. You're going to be required not to hover.
Yeah.
And I think, though, it's hard because that's part of the issues. We want to helping doesn't mean do it for them or to infantilize. And so, again, how do we give them the time to really struggle? Which letting people have a little struggle is a gift, because through that struggle, they're going to gain that independence. And I think we're learning now as an organization how to give that space. That's one example.
And that's a kind of a fundamental philosophy, it sounds like, because I think I've heard you talk about that really before, you know, this idea of giving kids a little bit of struggle and adversity in a safe community, you know, because, right, I mean, like, I know when I'm trying to learn something new, I feel like I want to bang my head against the wall. So it's like how to relieve stress and how to deal with the social and emotional challenges of life as you're trying to, you know, you're thrown into a new situation and you're scared. I mean, this seems like maybe a fundamental thing to, you know, to learn to help kids succeed.
I've talked to so many parents and I just realize we want to protect our kids. We want to help them. And we hover. We're hovering too much. How do we find that sweet spot to step back and allow them the independence to grow and to fall and get hurt, but not too hurt?
Right.
It's a tough balance. And I think we're too much on the hovering end, and it's a struggle. I myself am a parent of a special needs child. And, you know, watching her growth, the more she was given independence, the greater the growth spurt. So here's a child that was in special needs, pull out classes, who mom and dad pushed to be integrated in the mainstream. She not only finished her first year of college, she not only stayed and dormed at the college, she was just invited sophomore year into the honors program.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations.
Miraculous. Of which she did it on her own through the independence and the structure and the difficulty of mom and dad backing off.
And how do you do that as a, you know, with your team and as a family with your teachers? Because I imagine, you know, like, well, I don't imagine, I know that love is blind, right? Like, I look at my kids and I think I'd rather run full force into a brick wall than see them get hurt. You know, like, it's so painful watching them struggle, but yeah, it's essential. So how do you teach that balance with your teachers? Because I imagine they get, it's only human nature that they get fearful and they want to keep people safe, and that lowers expectations.
So when we look at what happens and we start visiting the agencies that take our kids after 21, you know, where are they? What are they doing? When we look at the end in sight, and again, how do we educate our parents and engage them? Because many of them, it's going well, but when the child ages out at 21, what's next? There's the reality. So getting people to see that reality early on to build up to the end result, having the individual child as they grow express what are their dreams, hopes, what do they want to do with their lives, and work with them to achieve their goals. That's how we're doing it. Again, it's not easy. It's incremental, but we have a big, hairy, audacious goal. And that is that everyone will be independent.
We're in the midst of this unprecedented time, and you've got a rope team that really knows what your kids need and want, and is ready to bring back this sort of the school to as much semblance of how it should be. But I'm sure you must have teachers who are also just like personally afraid for their own health. You know, I know we all interact with people who are on a spectrum of how comfortable they are just with the whole COVID thing. You know, I've got my mom who's really worried and stays at home all the time. And I've got, you know, my dad who isn't, and I got my brother who is. And just when you look around, folks, everyone responds to this differently. So how do you support 400 teachers and administrators who all probably have their own personal sort of feeling of safety and security. How do you manage that, Mike? It seems like a big challenge.
It's a very difficult challenge because not everything is physical. It's emotional, it's psychological, it's spiritual, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a huge responsibility. But again, we are created a plan for safety for all. We're doing everything to even deal with perceptions, even if it isn't safety, but if it makes people feel better, we're doing it. Mm-hmm. It goes though to essential work. And is it essential that students get these services? We believe it is. Now, I'm not saying it for everybody. I'm being very specific that we know our children are not doing well virtually, and they have extraordinary needs that will have them regress. And we know they're regressing based on parent input. We have a responsibility, much like the healthcare workers going to a hospital, the ambulance, the police, the firefighters, the people at our supermarkets checking us out. There are so many people that are taking the challenge. And what do they say? These people are heroes. And they are heroes. And not everyone is being forced back to work. There are choices individuals can make. And again, I don't want to speak for anyone, but is that tough? It is tough. It's very tough. Everything's difficult. We're losing friends and loved ones to COVID. It's real. It's awful. And we're not going back out of convenience. We're going back out of necessity.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful because it brings a mission oriented approach. Like you're in a hospital or you're, as you said, a fireman person or a police person. You know, that this is the mission and it's essential. And so it's filling that such an essential need. I like that. It makes it like really kind of stark and black and white that you're here for a purpose.
Yeah, I think, Mike, the word you used at the beginning of our conversation, that this is sacred work. Yeah. And I think in the conversations we have on this podcast, and this is coming out here, that idea of even in the midst of great challenge, and this is one of the greatest we've faced as a world, especially in education too, right? Having sacred work can be a driver for happiness and fulfillment and getting through the challenge, right? Like what a gift to have the sacred work, no matter how hard it is, right? Because it can really be a source of fulfillment and it matters. What you're doing is so important.
Right.
And Mike, how do you assess potential? Because you have kids who have every challenge under the sun. They have lots of different levels of abilities and different kinds of abilities. And kids with, as we talked about, behavioral challenges and multiple disabilities and autism. How do you assess what their potential is? How do you assess success? Like you've mentioned the word independence. That's different for different kids. How do you judge it and how do you make it happen?
I don't at all, because nobody has the right to limit anyone's potential. No one has the expertise of what anyone's potential is. No one knows. So we have to assume potential's unlimited for everybody and to support everybody as fully as they can and to challenge people to grow and support them in their growth. But I believe strongly, strongly, Eric, that we shouldn't limit anybody's potential and that anybody, we can't even, I believe, ascertain like an algorithm of if we do this many discrete trials and this many hours of physical therapy, they're going to grow at this rate. Like there's really, I believe there's nothing that is black and white, that we just have to give everybody opportunity and support and skills, and that we have to assess and know where their baseline is and give skills to their areas of growth. But again, their outcome, I think, is unlimited.
And if those kids have brick walls in front of them, then it's hard to reach that potential. So I think you guys work, I mean, you don't just work with the students, but you work with the community, right? Like you're building partnerships and, you know, isn't that a part of the model, is that you have to work with the community so that people accept people with different abilities and they're, you know, so they don't become isolated and kind of keep confronting those brick walls in society and relationships and friendships, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And then how do we create win-win by raising awareness with the greater community at large and see the skills and abilities of our students and not looking at their disability, look at their ability.
As you transition these students out, what are some examples of success stories? Like, what do you see them out there in the world doing?
We're building programs that give our students skills that's of interest to them and that they can apply in the real world. And that's why anyone here in the podcast, if you have opportunities you think would fit our kids, please contact us. Get in touch. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We'd love to work with you. We'd love to explore. And I think that's another piece of this, that people do get involved and they do share. I just was contacted by Next for Autism, their newly appointed CEO. I've known over the years a former New Jersey superintendent. And he's like, Mike, I saw this information. And our organization would love to support things that you do. We're looking for these opportunities. So I think, too, that we need to work together with the community at large, utilize our resources, and really help kids that have not had the opportunities.
Mike, I'm curious, you know, you said in this conversation that the parents, your teachers are in agreement that you serve a population that really isn't going to do well in a virtual school environment. They need to be together. And I can imagine we have lots of parents from all over the nation listening who may be in a similar situation where they have kids that just, they know this is going to set them back. And they're in a district that isn't going back to in-person. They're in a place where they're being forced to do at home. So what is your advice to parents who might have kids who are inherently just going to really struggle based on the fact that they can't be getting all the services that they would typically get? How should they approach this time and this situation in order to help their kids succeed in whatever ways they can?
You know, our kids have outbursts, and this comes from the Rutgers program evaluation. The two biggest reasons our kids are having outbursts are, one, they're being told to stop doing something that they like doing, or two, they're being told to do something they don't want to do. That talks about the need for structure, for organization, for discipline, for boundaries. And I think that those are difficult for us parents to consistently provide. But I think if we can provide that, even when there is in-person school, that's going to help all our kids, regardless of their classifications.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Mike, I'd love to finish. You mentioned earlier with, just briefly mentioned your daughter. I'd love to hear just on a personal level how she's doing in university and if she's heading back in light of COVID. Like, what's happening on that personal front for you and your family?
So we've had a little battles lately, and the battles are because she decided last year at orientation that even though we live close to the college, she'd like to live there. And you know, I didn't even think she'd be able to sleep overnight on orientation without wanting to come home. So we acquiesced, my wife and I, and she not only stayed at college last year, she was there almost 5-6 nights a week, and she loved it. So her campus is opening up. She wanted to go back, and I'm like, look, hon, you had a great first year. She made Dean's List. And she also was invited into the honors program of the college. And so we're like, let's not press our luck. Let's go back into the dorms in January and let's go virtual as the college is. So she's doing incredibly well.
It's great to hear.
And as you know, she has been my inspiration for everything I do. And what my wife and I did for her, we want, or I now want my position to make sure the children of South Bergen Jointure Commission, they have that same opportunity.
Wow. So you're fully in, like you have this personal connection and you have your professional connection. And so the two must really play off of each other in informative ways.
Oh, you know, it's been life changing, and my daughter, you know, has been my hero. And I don't want to single her out. I have four children, and I could talk equally as well of all the three others. But what Jackie has done on her own and what she's overcome inspired my older daughter, who finished her doctorate and dedicated her dissertation
to her sister, I imagine.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. You feel it in the heart. That's a good leader.
It's incredible.
And so you do, as a leader, like if you could get rid of all the constraints around, you know, financial stuff and time and all the barriers out there, what's your full on dream for these students that you lead, that you're in your faculty? What's your full on, like, outlandish dream?
My outlandish dream is happening. I have incredible faculty and staff that are far more insightful than I am, far smarter than I am, and are doing magical things with the kids we're serving. So we're well on our path to helping each kid lead independent lives. So it all is good.
Amazing.
Awesome.
What an amazing treat to be able to hear your story and to be able to have the honor to work with you and your team as partners with you. We are so thrilled that things are continuing to progress and you're living out that dream and helping others in the process. So thank you, Mike. Thank you for joining us. It's been a wonderful conversation.
No, thank you, guys. Always good being in your company. Always good speaking with you.
Well, Eric, another terrific conversation. What stood out for you today in the discussion?
Well, one thing Mike said, I don't want to butcher it because he said it so well, but I mean, it's like, he's like, you can look at all the metrics and all the assessment tools and you can't, you still can't assess people's potential. Right. It's like a magical kind of thing, right? That you just have to be this guide and you have to know how to be a guide and not be the barrier, you know, and then these magical results can happen. And man, that is just, I had never heard it expressed in that way before. Like I would have thought, you know, an administrator would talk about all kinds of very precise assessment tools and, you know, this ticker tape and pop out, you know, the potential and the outcomes. But no, he's saying it's kind of almost like a mystery, almost a sacred, you know, it's a sacred thing that they're part of. So that really strikes me. And also how delicate it is to build your team, you know, because as we said, you have to have this incredible array of skills to be able to guide people and help them achieve their potential. And it's not all science, it's art.
Yeah. Yeah, and you pulled out something that stood out for me too, was just this idea, again, that not many administrators, I think, would describe it the way that he described in terms of their response to the crisis and how they're dealing with their students. He said, well, his very first comment was, this is sacred work. It is work that needs to be done. We have a huge responsibility. And I think that idea of finding something in your life that is so sacred that you know it has to happen, that's really a gift to have that in your own life. And it can be a driving force in times of great crisis to have that sacred thing you're aspiring for. So,
yeah, to know you are so important. You cannot let this community down. That's a good, powerful motivator.
It really is. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, as always, our listeners can find any of the specific things referenced in today's conversation in our show notes. There'll be links to anything called out if you want to go and learn more about the South Bergen Jointure Commission or any of the things that were mentioned today. Check out our show notes. And if you enjoyed the conversation, we will be having several others in the month of September that are focused around education and our response to how we are dealing with COVID as it pertains to kids and universities and the future of education. So please share this with others if you enjoyed it, and we look forward to the next conversation. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks. No barriers.
The production team behind this podcast includes senior producer Pauline Schaefer, executive producer Diedrich Jonk, sound design, editing, and mixing by Tyler Kottman, graphics by Sam Davis, and marketing support by Megan Lee and Carly Sandsmark. Special thanks to the Dan Ryan Band for our intro song, Guidance. And thanks to all of you for listening. We know that you've got a lot of choices about how you can spend your time, and we appreciate you spending it with us. If you enjoy this podcast, we encourage you to subscribe to it, share it, and give us a review. Show notes can be found at nobarrierspodcast.com.